It's the long overdue return of the best podcast in baseball. It's been too long since we chatted. So much has happened. There's a new president of baseball operations. There's this whole whirlwind of managerial talk elsewhere in the majors. Not just who could be hired as a new manager, but who's retiring as a manager. There's just a lot going on in Cardinals world, and it's time that we talked about it. I'm joined by Kevin Wheeler of Camo X. And one of the things, Kevin, that we're going to get into is a question I have for you. Is the real beginning of a new Cardinals direction, did it need the closure of the past week to be new? Did the Cardinals have to see the old go elsewhere?
I think there's a good argument for it. I don't know if I would say need, but I think that might be the proper way to look at it, right? The more you lean on the recent past, the more you're bound by it.
All of that in a brand new best podcast in baseball, including Kevin Wheeler's description of the Cardinals like that kitten in the poster. Just hanging on.
That's great.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, the long overdue best podcast in baseball. It's brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis, and I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. So anything happened in the past few weeks? The Cardinals have a new president of baseball operations. The Cardinals have a new or more recent losing season. The Cardinals have said they're likely going to explore trading Nolan Arenado again. The Milwaukee Brewers, Chicago Cubs, and Cincinnati Reds all made the postseason. So all three teams ahead of the Cardinals in the National League Central made the postseason, but two of them were out pretty quick. And the Brewers are down, as we're recording this, 3-0 to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are on the verge of playing for their ninth World Series championship, moving ever closer to the Cardinals' 11-0. And by the way, Mike Schilt retired as a manager. So there's been a whole lot to cover in the week since the last best podcast in baseball. But most of all, an explanation. There have been some false starts. And of course, my usual co-host, Jeff Gordon, retired, left the paper. It's very difficult to imagine a St. Louis Post-Dispatch sports section without Jeff Gordon. And his year helping me do this podcast was just a godsend. It was a great experience for me. He would swoop into the rescue to keep me honest, and you can see what happens when the guy retires. I just fall apart. So chaos. Yeah, chaos. So all of that is a long preamble to get to the point that I'm just going to lean more heavily on my other flotation device in a storm, and that's Kevin Wheeler. So thanks, buddy, for being a buoy.
Are you sure I won't sing?
You're my favorite buoy.
Yeah, buoy.
You're my buoy. Sorry. Yeah.
I love Public Enemy, so that's all I could think of there.
Oh, okay. No, it's good. That's good. Got that out of the way. Welcome to the podcast. That's Camo X. I keep wanting to say Camo X 11:20 a.m. I guess I still
can. You can, as long as you throw in the FM, too.
Or 104.1 FM. Sportscaster, knowledgeable baseball man, just master of the hot take, but with depth. Kevin Wheeler. Kevin, thank you for coming in. We have a lot to discuss and not a whole lot of time to do it, but we'll always take more time than people expect.
There's no short podcast with us.
No, I just want to start with this. All right. The Cardinals are in a spot right now where they have introduced a new president of baseball operations. He spoke for the first time. He's done the rounds. You've had a chance to talk with him. He's done podcasts, he's done radio appearances, he spent an hour talking with the beat writers. What is your takeaway from not just the new voice providing the message, but the guts of the message, like the gravity of the message that has come from the Cardinals going into this offseason?
Well, I think to me the weight comes with the weight in the comments comes with the understanding, and also I think the open embracing by Heimblum of change. Like change is the theme, right? Not only is it a change in the voice that's delivering the message and the name behind the person delivering the message, but the message is changing. And so is the ultimate way that you're going to be building a product. And to me, that's I think part of that, Derek, is because we've already seen some of that begin, right? We've had a whole year of buildup of, you know, guys like Rob Serfolio and other hires underneath Heim Bloom that have already started doing their work. And we've already started seeing, for example, prospects be impacted. We saw the draft be impacted. Mm-hmm. So I think to me, it's just underscoring that things are changing because change was necessary. The change on the nameplate was not the issue, right? The change of the physical voice certainly will help in the short term, right? I mean, how many times have we heard people that are in positions of power in sports? What, I mean, God, Tony La Russa talked about it all the time. Are they listening to me? Are they tired of my voice? Like that kind of thing. That's going to happen naturally over time, especially when performance wanes like it has the last few years. If the Cardinals were still winning 95 games, 100 games here and there and making playoff runs, we wouldn't be having any of these conversations. But clearly that's behind it. But the fact that my opinion, I think you agree with it to a degree, was that the previous regime's failure was their failure to change and adapt and grow. So to me, that's what's at the heart of everything with Heim Bloom is that I can hear in the words, I can see in some of the actions already that change is coming.
Yeah, I think it wasn't a lack of awareness of change and grow. I think it was maybe lack of investment to change willingness. And grow. Willingness, lack of outside voices, or at least outside influence to change and grow. I think so many of the things that the Cardinals were lacking, to me, fit in two columns. One was what they wanted to do and didn't have the capital to do so. Those are numerous things like expanding staff in the minor league level, which they didn't do. The facilities that got dragged along and the improvement down there, the pitching lab that is what 9 years overdue, right? These things that they wanted to invest in and yet got stalled for any number of reasons. Some of which was investment, right? It's all coming out of the same baseball operations budget and event. And there was a time when the Cardinals then went out and got a third baseman who absorbed some of that. There was also a pandemic in there when they reduced staffing. They had staff members leave and they just didn't replace them. Right. And so it comes in that column. The other one is this other column where they just didn't break from like a recipe that they felt worked for them at a time when other teams were finding the recipe that beat that recipe. And that's why you get a roster that has so many similar players. That's why you have drafts that seem to, you know, kind of circle the same kind of pitchers. And you have this sameness that had worked for them and yet was only like prolonging their place in the middle because they weren't getting what other teams were spying and were spotting and were developing and kind of pushing the game in a different direction. Cardinals were really good at identifying that sure thing college pitcher with a fastball that was going to get outs, but it was going to get balls in play. And they did that very well for a long time, and the game just changed, and they didn't.
Yeah, but we were all yelling about this all along. There's no reason to miss it.
No, I know. And I'm sorry, they were aware of it, but they just stuck with what worked.
It didn't work. And by the way, it only worked when you had generational talent on your roster. It only worked when you had Yadier Molina, you had Adam Wainwright all those years, you had Albert Pujols and Lance Berkman. It only worked because you had elite talent. That doesn't work when you're less than that. And what's interesting, and I think you hit on it in the beginning of that perspective you provided there, was there were no outside voices. Mm-hmm. You can't be in the sports in the modern era and only stay within one worldview. You need to be pulling people from other places. And even when you look at managerial hires and coaching staff decisions, they're all connected to the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Except for Jeff Albert, which was always kind of an interesting dynamic, right? We had fans blaming him.
But he was from the Cardinals.
Well, I know, but he had experience outside of it.
Well, so Skip, right? Skip was very valuable in that. and maybe even brought in a perspective because he came from other organizations.
Sure.
And so he was like, oh, this is what the Cardinals do that works so well. Hey, Cincinnati, you don't do this. Oh, this is what the Dodgers do so well. Hey, Cardinals, you definitely don't do this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was one of the guys who brought that perspective. But he, like Jeff Albert, right, still had these Cardinal roots.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying that those roots are bad or wrong. I mean, the Cardinal way has carried on, that term has carried on for a reason. Because when the way is about the really basic fundamentals that never change,
yeah,
right, the correct way to field a ground ball and the different ways to field ground balls and be in position. And it's, you know, a lot of it's about knowing your responsibilities, understanding what each play means for you. Like, those are the basic fundamentals. Those don't change. But the science of the game changes, because the more we understand things, the more we can adapt and find new training techniques. And that's one of the things that I didn't like. And I think there's no question that you're right, that some of the problems were related to the economy and getting a facility built. But you know what? You don't need your own lab to get in a lab.
Well,
everybody has a lab, man. There are labs all over St. Louis for this kind of stuff.
No, you're right.
You can go to college campuses that have them, and just that sheer lack of willingness to branch out.
Totally agree.
It was bizarre.
You know, it was several years ago, right, that I did a story that Rapsodo was here in their backyard.
Yeah.
Like, I went and visited Rapsodo, and I'm like, man, what? Why aren't the Cardinals like plunging into this? And, you know, they had the machines and they had everything like that. And it's like, but like, why not like gobble this up as a St. Louis thing? You got P3 that's grown up from there. I mean, and I don't know. You're right. There was a real lack of interest / aggressiveness. It wasn't a lack of awareness. That's not the case at all. Because
but that almost makes it worse.
Do this stuff.
If but you're aware things, and you just don't do anything.
No, absolutely. One of the things that I've been told a few times is that like they would make these initial investments and then watch the tech gather dust. And so it's like, all right, well then, like what? Then you're back in this question of like, well, hire staff so it doesn't gather dust.
Right. Right.
And then they're like, well, then we have to add staff, and now it's like. They just were like kind of caught in this deadly embrace of they wanted the traditional kind of devotion and commitment to staff that they had. They needed a fresh breath to then utilize the tech and the advancements that were coming in and that they were purchasing, and they never found a way to stitch those together.
Yeah, and I understand why there can be difficulties and delays and budget issues when it comes to redoing your entire spring training facility, right?
Yeah.
That's a massive investment. How much do instructors cost?
No.
To me, for budgetary reasons, that's ridiculous. Because you can hire 10 people for $1 million.
No,
you can hire 10 top of the line people for $1 million.
No, I think
like 1/10 of what you paid Lance Lynn in his last year. As a Cardinal, you could have for what one 15th of what you paid Miles Michaelis, you could have added 10 staffers.
I want, you're right, and I desperately want to agree with you because I think you're right. I do. And I know like everything about what you said is correct. Can I offer some perspective on that without it coming across like I'm advocating for that?
No, yeah. You're reporting here.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that has changed in the last 10 years is the increase of salaries in coaches because they became more competitive.
Yep.
And that was especially true when you're trying to go after, say, someone who's on the cutting edge of some of these things, because they could make a lot more money by working for 30 teams than working for one and or working for 40 players instead of working for one club. And we've seen some of this, right, where we've seen some guys hired from Driveline or from these other things by clubs, and they haven't all lasted.
No.
You're exactly right. I think at some point in time, the willingness or the idea that you're not going to be able to afford someone is a convenient out for you don't want to try to find the right person.
Yes.
And I think there was some of that going on too, is it was a very competitive, it still is, a very competitive marketplace for coaches, but they don't exist in a marketplace that's well publicized like players or that's statistical like players.
Yeah.
So finding out like what people make and what is a competitive wage and finding that takes real initiative by the team.
Right.
And
they should take, right? I mean,
which I'm going to add this a little bit.
It's going to save your big league payroll because then you're not going to have to pay
exactly
$15 million for a 38-year-old starting pitcher.
And this past year, the Cardinals had someone working on that. Like, okay, what have they not done and what do they need to do to expand? But not just like what positions those are, but what's a competitive wage for
sure.
that position? What's the length of contract for that position? What's the next look of a team? An example, like what is hiring somebody now to tell us how to use AI 3 years from now? What should that cost? And the Cardinals are looking into all that stuff. That's just like an arbitrary example, but like this notion of what does the future staff look like for player development and for a major league team? And how do you pay that staff, because there's going to be huge competition for the best of the best. It's not as simple as, well, we're going to have the highest paid pitching coach in Dave Duncan. Oh, well, we don't have Dave Duncan. Well, we're going to have the highest paid pitching coach in the game in Mike Maddox. That's not how staffs are built these days. And the Cardinals have spent the last year really looking at some of that. And I think it's fascinating, but I think it also speaks to, you know, what they weren't pushing to do before because of limitations that they had.
Well, I would say limitations they put on themselves.
Absolutely. All these things are limitations they put on themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not some external force that says you can't do this.
No, you have an internal budget that you put on yourself. I mean, you know.
Sure. But I mean, like, it's hard for me to understand a resistance to change when things aren't working. Because it really hasn't been working for a long time. I mean, the last homegrown starting pitcher that they benefited from in any real way was Jack Flaherty. That was 8 years ago.
I mean, Ryan Helsley, dude.
No, I'm starting pitcher.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it.
No, they've been great at the relief side. I got no complaints, man. They find new relievers, new closers every few years. I don't know why they've had success doing that. So tip of the cap. Good job, guys. But I mean, no, I'm serious. I'm not even being a smartass. Like, that's a valuable thing because they're not in that market overspending on the most unpredictable position on the planet.
That's fair.
But on the starting pitcher side, when you go 7 or 8 years without growing a pitcher, and this is not counting McGreevy yet, because obviously he's still just getting his legs settled as a major leaguer.
Or so Libertor.
Right. Same thing. They're just getting settled, and maybe they're those guys. But that still means there's like a 7 or 8 year window.
No, there is. But we saw that coming. We called it the donut hole.
Yeah.
You know, and was like, all right, well, they're past it. Oh, now there's another one on the horizon. There was a real.
Well, and a lot of that was because they wouldn't change their philosophy, right? I mean, we're going to keep drafting the same guys and not go, huh, you know what?
Yeah.
Huh, missing bats kind of works. Maybe we should take some of those guys.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it was Dakota Hudson. You know, had surgery and did not come back the same, right? Like, a lot of it was the fact that they did
not. But he was never going to be the guy we're talking about.
I mean, he could have been what Michaelis was this past year.
No, I agree. But, like,
their
problem was the front end.
No, I get it. I'm totally in agreement with you. I'm just, like, mapping what happened. Like, I'm mapping the contours of what happened.
Right.
Like, the homegrown guy who was supposed to be a ballast for the rotation, his elbow came apart and he didn't return the same way. He wasn't as effective. And that happens with Tommy John.
Sure. Well, that's why in 7 or 8 years, you should probably have at least 5 or 6 guys.
And then the draft, when they would have had those guys, they were sanctioned for the hacking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
But I mean, I still see guys in the third round, fourth round, fifth round that throw 100, and they don't take those guys.
They don't. They didn't take them. No, they.
I mean, they sure seem to this year. So again, you know,
no, but they,
a guy like
they
Tanner Franklin fits that kind of description, right? Right.
They got conservative because they were like, we're not going to have many picks, so we better make sure these picks work. Well, what do we know that works? That.
Yeah.
And it was like, and meanwhile, everyone around them is going, no, we know how to make 100 work.
Yeah. And it also didn't end up being a target in free agency either. I mean, like, you know, they had multiple opportunities, and instead of maybe signing two guys that are, you know, mid to late 30s, you know, $10, $12 million a year guys, sign one guy for 20 who's better.
Right. Well, then that's the Nathan Eovaldi example, right?
Exactly. Like, yes.
All of a sudden you had a marketplace. There were a lot of things going on for the Cardinals all at once, working against them. And one of them is like, they're just risk averse. Like,
yes.
We can talk about Mad Max.
That's
Scherzer,
a great, yeah, that's a great point.
They were just risk averse, and they were willing to put a price tag on pick them. Like, they were willing to put, look at what they were willing to pay Mike Leake, right?
Yeah.
That is a no risk move. I mean, there's risk, but what a predictable pitcher. Right. Just super predictable ground ball pitcher, you know, has been efficient, all that guy. I mean, you look at him and you go, man, I know what he's going to give every year. Right.
Yeah. But we didn't, did we?
No. Well, what wasn't predictable is just how he didn't mesh with the clubhouse at all. Right. Just was not a fit. And he kind of saw that coming. You know, we'll see. But anyway, just on the mound, very predictable pitcher. Cardinals would then go for like the 1 year scratch off ticket for the guy who was more risky. Well, the market started saying, well, we don't need to do that because we're going to go at a higher price for that guy. We might go term. And if we lose 1 year due to injury, Eovaldi, right? Like, he's an injury risk. Then we're going to get tremendous return, or we hope we're willing to take that risk.
Right.
And the Cardinals just didn't. And so the market started pricing up the type of pitcher that they used to seek. And now we're like, well, gosh, that's not in our price range. I mean, the if there's a huge miss of this last few years, it's the trading for Arenado and not outfitting the team with
Correct.
A top starter.
Correct.
That
if you did them both, you might have had a playoff run.
That would have radically changed the look
yep.
of, you know, 2022. Because then you're not like Jose Quintana is your number one starter. He's your number two because you got whatever, an Eovaldi or somebody there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the miss. And it's one that you don't have to look very far for the Cardinals to admit that was a miss because then they scrambled to sign, you know, Gibson, Lynn and Gray a year too late.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sonny Gray a year or two earlier would have been perfect.
Sonny Gray being the team that traded for him when the Twins did was perfect. That would have been the perfect move.
Yeah.
And we knew it at the time.
Yeah, we all talked about it. I mean, not just him, but, you know, that idea that you're not far off with your roster. You got a lot of pieces. You got a good bullpen. You had Arenado and Goldschmidt at that time still at the peak of their powers.
Right.
That was the time to make a move. That was the time to go higher, especially when that going higher meant a shorter-term deal, right? We're not talking about 10 years,
for
Garrett Cole or whatever. You know, we're talking about 2 or 3 years for a guy that's maybe not a pure ace, but better than anybody you have.
So we can relitigate how they got here a whole bunch and we have and talked a lot about it through the years. So what goes forward? What stuck in your ear from Chaim Bloom about what's next? He wanted to set a strong line about how they're not surrendering. They're not yielding. They intend to continue to push, but he colored that with the phrase saying it might be a longer term view than normal. So in some ways, it's a familiar statement, right? It's back in the middle. We're going to try to contend, but we're not going to push in to contend. But did you hear something different in how he arrived at that statement? Or do you hear something in the echo of that statement that suggests something new for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I don't know if I can think of a specific line or, you know, phrase, but the overall tone was, and I know he joked about it, 'cause he's like, I don't care if you guys call it rebuild, I'm not going to call it that, but the acknowledgement that, you know, look, work needs to be done, man. This is not about the moment, and it's, you know, look, they stretched out that era of success really long, and that is really hard to do, and they deserve credit for it. But no franchise has ever had perpetual success, right? And I really appreciated the acknowledgement that you're in a different cycle at the moment, and that getting to be a World Series team is not about just kind of hanging on, you know, gripping the top of the fence and just hanging on for your life. There is an acknowledgement that change has to happen. And you know, when talking about the big league roster, that the just again the acknowledgement, not getting specific into players or positions or whatever, that the mix doesn't work. It's there, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not complementary. There's a lot of redundancy. There are certainly weaknesses that aren't going to be filled internally, but will probably take time to, because you know the one thing that he talked about, that Heimblum talked about, Derek, that rings true, and it's been true of all the great Cardinal teams over time, is that your stars really do need to be homegrown. You have to be able to produce your own elite players. It's not that you can never go outside to get them, but you can't go outside to get them all. And that's kind of where we've been the last 5 years, where, yeah, you know, all your, almost all of the big guys, Goldschmidt, Arenado, that's not to say that there have been no internal developments, but like when you're talking about core players, just this past year's lineup, the only guy that hits in the top part that's, well, I should say this year, because this year was the transition year. But before that, who are any of your really impactful homegrown bats that were guys you would hit 2, 3, 4 and say, those are our rocks? I mean, it was Contreras, it was Goldschmidt, it was Arenado, right? On the starting pitching side, it's Sonny Gray who you had to go out. So they're all the biggest performers.
Well, I mean, even Miles Michaelis came from the outside.
Right, right. And look, Miles for a number of years was really good. That was a great signing. Like, that initial signing was great. I think the extension came too early and didn't need to happen and was a mistake. But the original signing of him was brilliant. It was a great contract, and he did really well in those first couple of years, first 2, 3 years. But yeah, you're right. It kind of reinforces that if you look at the last 5 years, most of your top performers were outsiders. Now, that's not true to say about Arenado. He was still top of his game when you got him. But, you know, Goldschmidt was already starting to get older. He wasn't declining because he just won an MVP when he was here. But, you know, you knew the age was going to catch up eventually. So you're picking up guys on the back ends of their careers, or at least maybe starting in the middle like Arenado and moving toward the back half, right?
Right.
And the inability, you know, we talked about pitching. This has been a position player thing too. They're great at turning out good players. They're great at turning out the guys that fill out a lineup. They just haven't gotten the stars. They haven't gotten the impact guys right.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing to find. So to me, that stands out. And you should be building your player development system, and you should be drafting and going into international free agency and major league free agency with the idea of getting difference makers and not just making sure you always have depth. Depth, I'd rather chase depth in free agency. I'd rather spend $6 or $7 million on a bench guy than and have impact guys coming up in my system, mm-hmm, than just have a bunch of guys that I know can play in the big leagues, but they're not going to be stars.
Yeah, that's kind of been the Cardinals brand, to be honest, is the develop the type of complementary players that the other teams want to be winners.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
like,
look, they do a good job of it, man. I mean
Tommy Edman is a great example.
Absolutely.
And Brendan Donovan is about to be. And,
yep.
You know, all those things. Right. So, okay. So, what you've outlined it well. So what are let's jump into like, what are the moves then to do? Do you see that star player in the system?
I think there's a possibility more now and more in the last calendar year than we've had in a while. I mean, first of all, Ivan Herrera might be a guy like that.
He might be.
You know, yeah, got to figure out the defense, like, you know, because you either need to find a way to get him to first base or something, or you got to fix the catching. And I know the fixing the catching is the hard part. But
I mean, he might just be a really standout hitter. Those
exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if he's a legitimate, like if what he did this year is what he continues to do. That's a damn good hitter, right? I mean, that's all-star caliber hitting. If he has enough at bats at the all-star break, those numbers put him in the all-star game.
I don't know about the home run total, like the power total, but
it's getting
real,
there.
There's a real, yeah.
I mean, he almost hit 20 and he missed 50 games or something.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that guy, he might be that kind of bat. But I think I'm seeing more of it. Like, I think J.J. Weatherholt has that ability, right? Yeah. I mean, he's a different – but he's also, you know, he's a caliber of player in the draft they haven't had access to, right?
Sure.
So you think about it. Like, the guys that they've drafted with the high upside abilities in the first round, guys like Jordan Walker, guys like Nolan Gorman, they were available when they were for a reason.
Right.
Because they had some flaws, because they had some things you had to, you know, swing and miss was always a big concern for Nolan Gorman. The question about defense, he was never not a third baseman, but he was not a lock to stay at third base, right? Like, you know, where Weatherholt, he's going to stay on the dirt. You can know that, you know, he's that kind of ball player. That kind of player is not there in the 20s. They're just not. Like, ability can be there. And that's where the Cardinals' problem with development, right? Like, a stronger player development team might get more out of guys like Gorman and Walker, because they would take them when they're young and start to already fix these flaws that were still existent when they're, you know, in their second and third years in the major leagues.
Yeah.
So they, you know, maybe, but a guy like Weatherholt, to me, that's a plug and play guy. Any team can draft that guy, because that guy's already all the way around. He's mature. He's smart. He basically knows his own game. He doesn't need to learn it. He just needs the experience. He just needs, like, the repetitions at AA and AAA and facing better competition. So, to me, he's that level of impact player. Doyle has that ability. And then you see a guy like Raniel Rodriguez, who, you know, at 18 is hitting for crazy power in good pitchers leagues against guys that are way older than him. So maybe there are a few of those guys starting to show up now. But
and Joshua Baez, too. I mean, his growth this year.
Big deal.
Pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it in the same category as Weatherholt or Raniel Rodriguez yet.
I don't know, man. You might put it in the same category.
No, I mean, the reason I say that is, I mean, like, you know, he's been in the minor leagues for a long time.
Sure.
And he made a jump, and that's good. And I want to see if that continues, and I expect it will. But I mean, I want to see if that continues versus, I mean, J.J. Weatherholt in one calendar year is on the doorstep of Major League Baseball. You know, Raniel Rodriguez is one of the youngest players at the level he's playing, and he's dominating. Like, that's a different thing than, like, a 22 or 23-year-old at Double A.
Take this for what it's worth, but the, like, advanced metrics of what they do well put Baez pretty close to Weatherholt at the same age. And I understand what you're saying, that he's been in the minors for a lot longer. He also was a lot younger when he was drafted. You know, Weatherholt was the most polished hitter.
Yeah.
In the game. Joshua Baez was a kid from Boston who hadn't played all that much. And here they are about the same age. And, you know, Baseball America kind of had this amazing data dump of some of the advanced metrics and Statcast from the minor leagues. And you're talking about a guy like Weatherholt, who is incredible with his approach at the plate, right? 79% contact rate, 84% contact rate when he swings at pitches in the zone. A really low chase rate of 17%. Obviously, Baez has a bigger chase rate, 23%. But as far as how often and how hard he hit the ball, his expected production was greater than Weatherholt's. Like, just because of how he impacts the ball more consistently. So I don't think it's all that much of a reach to at least acknowledge the stride Baez took.
Oh, no, for sure.
To be somewhere in that paragraph.
Yeah, I think there's more risk with his profile.
Sure.
But I think Weatherholt almost comes with no risk as far as, like, bare minimum, he's an everyday player.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right? Like,
fair.
And I think he's actually way more than that. I just the ability, because there's two things that really carry in from the minors to the majors. And that's difference between being able to tell the difference between a ball and a strike, right? Swing decisions. Yeah. And then the ability to consistently make hard contact.
Yeah.
Not just the highest end, right? Not just the Giancarlo Stanton 120 mile an hour exit velo. Just the consistency of hard contact. And with him, not only hearing him talk about it, but seeing him do it, mm-hmm. knowing when the times are to play for power, right? Yep. When the count favors you, when the pitcher's repertoire favors you, when the circumstances of the game favor you. And that's, to me, like, that's why I feel much more certain about him than I have a Cardinals prospect in a long time.
I think he's going to be Dustin Pedroia.
I think he's I think he might be Chase Utley.
Oh my gosh, I don't know, man. All right. Maybe. I mean, if he is, then you have the great player. You know, there's a 10-year span in the National League where the WAR leader was Albert Pujols and number 2 was Chase Utley.
Yeah. I like the Pedroia comp too, though, because he's got that dirt dog, you know, that kind of.
I mean, he's just going to go out there and he's going to hit lasers. And, you know, Utley had
a lot.
I
think he's a way better athlete than Pedroia was.
I don't think you're giving him enough credit as an athlete.
Pedroia?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think he is, but I think Weatherholt's a superior athlete. He's bigger, he's stronger. I think he's a faster runner.
I don't know, man. Like, before the knee stuff, Pedroia was really special. I mean, his body.
I agree, but his career high is 21 home runs. I think Weatherholt hits 30.
Okay, well there you go. Then you're high. I mean, then that's great. All right, we're
not every year, by the way. I don't want to be clear. I don't want to say he's like 30 a year. I'm saying I think he eventually at some point hits 30 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, I voted for Chase Utley for the Hall of Fame. So you are
And again, I love Pedroia. He's one of my favorite guys. I mean, how can I not like the 5'8", 5'9", greedy guy?
I just like the fact that maybe J.J. Weatherholt will drop I'm hitting lasers on us. That'd be great. That'd be great. If he's
got
listening.
The personality too, yeah.
He does, yeah. Just bring that to the ballpark. So, all right, so the Cardinals need stars. And, well, before we move on, just if we can briefly, he is at a point in his career cycle where he's about to get paid through arbitration. He's got one option left. The Cardinals fast forwarded, and I understand why they did, but they certainly fast forwarded his arrival and his development stalled.
Yeah.
It's like the worst situation when it comes to his contract status for them. So they have fewer years to get greater production from him before he goes elsewhere. Like, where does he fit into this?
I don't know. That's the hard part. I mean, in hindsight, it's very clear that they brought him up when he wasn't ready. In hindsight, in real time, it was a little less clear, right? Because
I want to add it to a quiz. They weren't ready.
No, good point. Yeah, they weren't ready to support a young slugger. Yeah, you're right. Great point. That should definitely be added. They did not have the structure in place.
They did not have the
to
roster.
Develop this player correct. At the major league level.
They did not have
absolutely.
The roster that would have allowed him to just go hit for a high average. Go hit the ball hard on the ground, dude. Like, and look at all the guys his size and their development arcs. You know, get some positive reinforcement, grow into bringing the ball up.
I mean, do that in the minor leagues, man. That Aaron Judge did that in the minor leagues.
And that's fine. Then he should have done that there.
Yeah.
But then either way, we're saying the same thing. But look at – you have to learn something from other hitters with his profile. You just have to. They don't grow into their power until the mid-20s.
They're all
smoking the ball, and they're all hitting for high average because they're learning to –
You've got to start
to hit line drives.
Here's the problem with what they did with him. And I think we've talked about it before, but I mean, I think it's obviously relevant now. I don't think that you give up on this guy. I was super excited to see the video of him already at Driveline, getting some work in and getting started. Because to me, getting started early, starting to build some habits, you can't fix it now, but you can start. And I was glad to see that.
Yeah.
Because part of this is a player being willing to accept that he can't do what he's always done. And you can't just fall back on old habits because it feels good. Right. Oh, it makes me feel comfortable. Dude, if you can't hit, you can't hit. You can't go back to what's not working. And I think the real problem with this, as I'm looking at it, again, this is hindsight, but I think we also, all of us, kind of raised some of these questions toward the end of the spring where he made the team because he was starting to tail off as you were facing more and more major league pitching and not minor league pitching. He was starting to tail off. The problem with his development is they didn't start on any adjustments or changes immediately. immediately. Now, I'm not talking 2021 immediately following the, or 2020, you know, immediately following the draft and being in the, you know, the COVID camp and all that. But like when you first show up, this, he should never have played a day at third base. Never.
Right. Never.
He was never going to be a third baseman. And draft analysts knew it before the draft. That was the word before he was ever a Cardinal, that this guy's going to be a right fielder. He really runs well. He's got a great arm. He's too big for third base. How many 260-pound third basemen have we ever seen in this sport?
You mean in the majors or like like weekend?
I mean, like basketball. Think of all the big third basemen. Scott Rolen, he was 215, 220. Nolan Arenado's 215. Who's 260 playing third base? Yeah, I mean, this is my point. And it's not about – I'm not about out of shape. He's in great shape, man. The guy can fly. And he can throw like so wasting that time having him play, because I know the argument is always we're just wanting to get comfortable. No, the time to be uncomfortable is in A ball so that you're not uncomfortable in the major leagues. Like you need to fix the swing problems and the approach problems before you get to the big leagues, not after. And when you take a guy who's always been one of the best players on the field, and you take a guy who's physically better than everybody around him because he's bigger, faster, and stronger.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he had success when he was young against minor league pitchers that make a lot of mistakes.
Right.
As soon as you're getting to pitchers that don't make many mistakes, you don't have the tools because you were just allowed to be yourself when you were younger. And okay, it led to numbers, but it didn't lead to skills that translate at the major league level.
It's interesting. All right, so Cardinals need their star to come from within. They have some clear potential stars.
They
have one star in limbo that they're trying to, you know, get to, you know, get the tools and the skills to be that potential star again. That's going to have to come internally. Cardinals need pitching, and they have redundancies. Can they make this work, and how, Kevin Wheeler, would you go about doing that? If the Cardinals don't see 2026 as this year to make the push for a World Series, if that's what we're going with, right, the contend or the play to win versus the show up knowing you're going to win nuance, I guess.
Right, right.
If that's not 2026, if that's not 2027, then – Newt Barr, Brendan Donovan, JoJo Romero, they have no play. No, their time doesn't overlap. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So do you go there and make those moves to get the starters slash pitching that you need?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of creative ways to go. I talked about this the other day. I kind of want to run it by you because I actually think this is a great offseason to be opportunistic. Because I think a lot of teams are going to be afraid of big contracts in free agency because of the CBA talks coming up.
Sure, absolutely.
So I think that vastly increases the value of a Sonny Gray to a contending team because it's only 1 year and it doesn't extend into the new CBA.
I agree with that. I think
And I play that for Brendan Donovan. I think I think it raises the value of almost all of the players you have in those areas of redundancy. Because if I could look at it and say, boy, I really need a good hitter that can bat at the top of my order and play a couple of positions, do I want to spend on that on a multi-year deal in free agency, or do I want to trade for Brendan Donovan? It's a two-year commitment, and neither of the salaries are locked in yet.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, I think
this offseason lends itself.
There has been some discussion, really like, creative. Well, the Cardinals won't get much in return for Sonny Gray. No, look, Sonny Gray will be in demand.
Yes.
Even at his price, it's a 1 year deal with an option.
Yeah.
That, you know, that the Cardinals may have
but
to
it's only
cover
a $5 million
buyout,
right?
Well, which the Cardinals may have to cover. Fine. That's where it begins.
Go but buy a player.
He will be in demand. And because of exactly the reasons that you mentioned. And oh, by the way, if he's your third starter, you're really good.
Yes. And that's kind of the point, right? And on that amount of money, bigger market teams aren't going to blink. You know,
no such because, thing as a bad 1 year deal.
Right. And when you're thinking about, you know, where you are, I think there's a dual pronged thing, right? If I'm going to trade Sonny, and I'm not saying I got to run him out of town, I think he's a good guy to have. So if he's back, that's fine. But if you get the value that we're talking about, do that. At the same time though, get into the pillow contract market in free agency. get in on guys like Dustin May and Walker Buehler and guys that are coming off down years or injuries or bad guys. Kyle Freeland, get him out of Colorado and see if there's something there. But no, like,
I mean, is there a more Cardinal pitcher than him at this moment?
Maybe not. But the guy that I would love to see you give a move to is a guy like Dustin May with elite stuff, big velocity. You know, yeah, he's hurt a lot, but like, that's okay. You're not spending big time money.
Well, but you are now in the market, though. Like, that's the problem.
Well, I mean, that's not big time money. $15 million on a 1-year deal with an option or something.
Please tell the Cardinals that.
Well, it's not that big a deal if you're trading Sonny Gray.
No, I know, but it has been like that's been.
No, I get it. I get it. Maybe that's what needs to change, right?
Hey, but maybe that's the new voice. Like, okay, cool. But yeah, but ownership hasn't changed, and there has been like this like stop there where they're like, no, that's that risk is beyond the wish.
No,
like,
I get
whoa,
it.
Whoa, 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 the market is way beyond that. The market is paying these guys closer to what their actual value, healthy, is. You're not going to get the rebate.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, but you got to start playing the game the way that the top teams play it.
Sure.
You know, because if you hit on any of those guys, one, you might get a surprise performance and win more games than you thought. And two, you might turn that into another set of good young players if that player's killing it.
Oh, and yeah, there's no harm in signing the two guys who you think, man, I need 3 good months from this person.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip them for who's going to help me. It's not ideal. It's not any way the Cardinals have operated before. But there's nothing wrong with thinking that way.
No, and I think that like, this offseason could be super busy and fun and creative. Because I don't know that if you trade Sonny, you still have to add pitching. And I don't think it's good to just add the 35-year-old 1-year deal guy that's just not going to have any long-term value. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be targeting those guys that are, you know, late 20s, early 30s, who at one point maybe thought they were going to get a big contract, but they didn't pitch themselves to that.
Yeah,
and
Walker
they're just
Buehler's
looking
really
for another
fast.
Way to kind of build some value back
because
they're motivated. They have stuff, you know, they're guys that do have high-end velos and special breaking balls and things along those lines. I think that's the market to play in right now, especially if you're able to move off any other salaries. If you're able to move any of Arenado's money, if you're able to move Sonny Gray's money, look, moving a guy like Donovan probably going to save you a good bit of money in arbitration, right? So
same with JoJo Romero
King. Right. And that was kind of where, when I was listening to what Chaim Bloom was saying, when I was listening to what the DeWitts were saying, they're not talking about cutting payroll anymore, right? I mean, we're going to give Chaim the resources he needs. Well, okay, we don't have to raise the payroll now, but you can stay level and do it differently and get a bunch of young dudes. And by the way, I think for some of these guys, you can be, when I'm saying young dudes, I'm not talking about 18-year-olds. There are all kinds of good contending teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers that have a lot of high-level minor league pitching prospects. They don't need them all, but you could use a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, the Yankees have like 3 super interesting guys that are AAA, AA, and they're blocked. They're blocked by Gerrit Cole and Schlittler and Rodon and whoever else they're going to want to go get. There are a handful of those teams, though, where you might be getting that higher end talent for the back of your rotation because they're new and unproven. That you could use even now.
Yeah, the Yankees are a good place to look, you know, with their past history and Brendan Donovan and, you know, even Lars Nootbaar.
I'd be working the phones hard on the Yankees because they got Cunningham and Hess and Legrenier. Yeah, they've got a bunch of dudes there.
And they all come from the sweeper school where they've all...
Well, they all throw hard too, yeah.
They all throw hard. They all went to the gas house, right? I think that's what they call it, the gas station. Gas station, that's what it is.
Yeah.
They're their lab and they throw sweepers. I mean, a year ago, I did a story. I was like, here are the players that the Cardinals should be trying to look at. Like, these are the players, like, if these contending teams are going to be looking to trade at the trade deadline, here are the pitchers that will catch the Cardinals' eye. And Yesavage was one with Toronto, and Schlittler was the other one with the Yankees. And I'm not going to like beat my chest for being like, oh, look at them now. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
Their results were fine, but what they were doing metrically, what they were doing to miss bats, what their pitches do,
yeah,
it's like, that's where you look. That's where you go.
Yeah, and Dodgers are a fit like that too. They've got a lot of guys that are going to be blocked if their rotation is healthy, right?
Yeah. No. I mean, that's just, we've seen this act before.
No, but I mean, they have
Dodgers are never going to be healthy.
They have like 10 to 12 guys though, right? And they're going to keep backing up.
But healthy pitching just isn't their thing.
No. What I'm saying is they have guys that are really good young pitchers that are pretty much blocked.
They are, but you said if they stay healthy. I think
right, but they have others too. This is kind of the point. You know,
you're right. Yeah. I just was making a point that let's just get over the Dodgers. They're going
to
grind through pitchers.
Yeah.
And like, just call it for what it is.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You know, they're going to grind through pitchers, and they're going to every so often spit out a pitcher like Walker Buehler or May, who just, you know, got caught up in the grind.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just it's the opposite of what the Cardinals did this year, which it was like nurture and maintain because they had no depth. The Dodgers would be like, we're going to race through these guys because we have money to spend for depth. So
yeah.
Away we go. All right. So do you make some tough trades, man? Do you make like, Brendan Donovan, very popular player.
Yeah.
Identity of the team.
Yeah.
Only all-star. But I mean, do you see a way he fits into when this team wins?
Yes, but I don't think it's autumn. No, I see it, right? Like, I wouldn't necessarily lean that way, but I see it. The problem that I have, though, is, again, we're getting back to this point where you have a lot of redundancy at the positions he plays. So do you want to pay him to do that job, or do you want to give those opportunities to other guys that are going to be around longer that aren't as expensive? But to me, like, I guess my philosophy right now is less about who the Cardinals on their major league roster, who they have to keep, compared to the part of this where is what are you getting? I think the what are you getting matters more than the who is going.
All right. So just
does that make sense? So like if I get a better offer for Alec Burleson because he's a longer controlled player, even like don't want to trade that guy because he's young, he's inexpensive, he can really hit, right? But that's all the reason why he might get you the things you don't have as an organization.
That's a really interesting. I mean, I like it. I think that's a great point.
Yeah. I don't want to say that I think it like chronologically, the guys that should go should be guys like you mentioned, like Romero, Newt, Donovan. They're older. They're a year or two left before they're free agents. Like chronologically, that makes the most sense. But if those guys aren't getting you the bang for the buck that you want, and somebody else is saying, hey, what about that other guy? What about Nolan Gorman? What if we offered you this? Like, I think it's more about what are you being presented with as a return than it is about which guys should be the ones that go.
I think that's a fascinating point. Where the Cardinals side on that might tell us a little bit about where they want to be with their payroll. Will tell us a lot about the window they think they have to win. And also it'll say a lot about where these players are. I think, you hit on it. Sonny Gray is going to be sneaky attractive to teams, not only because of his ability, but because of the length of the contract. I think Lars Nootbaar is going to be really interesting for teams.
Yeah, a lot of the StatCast teams are going to be like, we can fix it.
Oh, yeah. And also ABS comes in.
Yep. Good point. Yeah.
There isn't going to be a hitter in the game who might benefit more from the ABS challenge system than him. And I think teams will look at that. And if they're not, then they should start. I know I had that conversation with someone from another team this past week, just about like, how do you look at that?
Yeah.
Do you factor that in? Because holy cow, like it might be a small thing, but for him, it could be a huge thing.
Yeah.
And and there's a whole lot of that where what they look to do will tell us a lot about where they think they are in spending and in terms of their timetable to contend.
Yeah. I'm not in the group of people that thinks that this has to be a 4 or 5 year thing. I think you could be a good year of a lot of things, right? A good year from being a playoff team, like a good year of player development, a good year of the right trades and maybe picking out the right free agent signings to target people for bounce backs or pillow contracts or whatever. Yeah. I don't see why in a year from now, we couldn't look at 2027, assuming the CBA thing is not, a long-term problem. But I don't think we should look at it now and say, oh, you're at least 2 or 3 years away. You're probably 2 or 3 years away just because you want to give things time. Mm-hmm. But the right developments, Weatherholt being a dude, if Liam Doyle is a fast climber like a lot of the other college pitchers who throw 100, if Herrera's the real deal, which I think he is. I mean, there's nothing about his profile that says anything's fake. Everything right. points to this is real, you know. And then what if you do just get anything out of Jordan Walker? If right. you just get league average play out of him, it changes what your lineup is.
Or you get league average on base percentage from Victor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, like, so mm-hmm. none of those things are certainties, but I don't think this is like, I don't think it has to be a super long-term thing. Okay. I don't think this is where you have to say, oh, 2030 is when I mean, it could go that way because, you know, some of these guys are going to get hurt at some point. You know, I mean, pitchers are going to get hurt, whatever. You can't really control the fact that that's going to happen, which, by the way, is another thing I think that they got obsessed with that ends up harming them. Like, you know, we want guys that we're not going to try to get guys that are not going to get hurt. Well, all right, but you're buying from the bottom of the barrel then.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, yeah. I mean, like, I'm not saying go all Dodgers and just get seven guys that are always hurt with great stuff, but you do need stuff.
Right.
And yeah, the risk of injury is just comes with stuff. It comes with effort. But I think there's a scenario because, look, you've got abundant catching in your organization. You've got a potential star knocking on the door. You've got good depth already at the major league level. And there are some other guys. I mean, you got Baez can factor in next year. Rodriguez probably a little further away. But, I mean, he's a guy that with his offensive profile could be really interesting. And, you know, I don't think this has to be long term. You have to be prepared for it to be, right? But I can conceive of this team being, I guess the best way to put it is going into an off season here soon in the next year or two where you're like, okay, we think we can be pretty good. We're going to add something.
The other headlines of the past week or 2 weeks involved managers. And there were so many of them with ties to the Cardinals.
Kevin. Yeah.
Skip Schumacher hired as the Rangers' next manager. I don't think anybody was surprised by that, given the year that he spent working with the Rangers and being in their front office. It kind of always appeared like he was going to be the heir, and sure enough, he was. Albert Pujols drawing attention from multiple teams, and that list seems certain to grow. He is a legitimate man. I cannot stress this enough. The work he's put in, the conversations he's had, the way he's positioned himself, it feels at times like he's a free agent again.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And in demand. That may work out with the Angels. Orioles are reportedly interested. The Padres could circle in here.
He makes a great fit to the Padres to me.
He makes a great fit for the Padres, who have an opening because Mike Schilt retired. But real quick, Nick Punto also mentioned, and he was on Schilt's staff.
Yeah,
the Padres. And so, you know, according to reports there in Minnesota, Punto is a candidate up there. So lots of Cardinal ties to manager jobs. The Schilt thing is interesting. It dredged up a lot of why he left here.
Yeah.
I won't bore people by explaining that a lot of the things that were in the news this past week were in the news back in 2021. I get it. You know, it takes a little bit to go back and read those things, but you know, the friction with other coaches was part of that season's quote unquote narrative.
Right.
I remember at the All-Star break, there was a heated exchange during a meeting with coaches there about their hitting approach between Schilt and Jeff Albert. You know, at the end of the season, there was a heated exchange, multiple heated exchanges that we know of, between the front office and Schilt, as he expressed frustration for the direction they were going in, and the front office pushed back with some of it. I was told and reported at the time that Schilt took his criticism, quote unquote, and pushed them too far. And when Mozeliak revisited it, went back and talked to the people who were there, he agreed that like some of the damage was irreparable. That was described by multiple people at the time, reported at the time, that they just could not work together. And so they made the move. And a lot of this has come back up. It's not new, but it seems to be new to some. It's not newly reported.
Right.
Kevin Acey with the San Diego Union-Tribune did add the detail that coaches or staff threatened to quit. I'll be honest, I was not told that. I did ask about that at the time and subsequently since. So it might just be the people that we talked to, or it could be the description. because one of the things that I was told by multiple people and reported at the time was that Marmol helped mend some of those ruptures. That one of the reasons why Marmol stood out as a potential replacement and now ultimately is the manager is because of the role he had in keeping the staff like together as Schilt's bench coach. So it's possible that that we heard the same things just from different people, or time allows for a little loosening of the lips. Who knows? All I'm saying is that it brought all that back up, and Schilt seems pretty aware of it in his comments.
Yep.
He seems to know that like what he was doing was both unhealthy for himself and it was creating a further situation where it might be even more unhealthy for himself. So he's retired. What do you make of all of this, Mr. Wheeler, now that I've kind of presented this?
Yeah, I mean, one, it's not surprising when the sequel to a movie looks a lot like the original movie. And I think
he won, so like
allowed
for some forgiveness, right? But also like you see guys who that doesn't resonate, that approach doesn't work with, but you also hear from guys who it does. Like I've talked to coaches who kind of like that situation.
No, it's
sports staff that don't at all.
Yeah, there was success there, but I would also argue that that all proves everything that a lot of us say all the time is, you're winning because your roster's good.
Right.
Go look at Mike Schilt's lineups. I just looked at that. It's funny because you're talking about how he didn't like their approach in his last year. They had nine guys reach double digits in home runs, 330 home run hitters. You had six 3+ WAR players, four plus WAR players. I mean, like that was Goldschmidt and Arenado at their peak. That's Tyler O'Neill hitting 34 home runs. That's Dylan Carlson having his only good year as a major leaguer. It's fascinating. And, in San Diego, he had a lot of talent there. This is not knocking him, because this is what I say about every manager. Tell me about the roster, then we'll talk about the manager. The manager is secondary to me, especially in the modern game, where it's much more about the manager front office combination than it is just the manager.
We didn't see a season like that from Dylan Carlson again. Saw only flickers of that from Tyler O'Neill again.
Yeah, who also left after that year?
No, I know. You're right.
Jeff Albert left after that year.
Well, these are related, right? That was the conflict.
It was funny that the argument was over the approach, but yet that was actually a pretty damn good offensive team that had 330 homer guys.
But it also had to shift it. I mean, Albert admitted it, too. Like, they had to shift it midseason. They were...
No, I don't disagree. It's just funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and they got better, but we've seen similar rosters not get that much performance. Dylan Carlson had a great year. So what was it that brought that out? And what role did Schilt play in doing that? So
yeah,
I think you do that. I just wonder, and this is a fitting conclusion, Kevin, is I just wonder if what we've seen in this past few weeks with Chaim Bloom's debut as president of baseball operations, Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina possibly moving on to other organizations as coach and manager, and Mike Schilt's retirement, if that is the closure on the Cardinals era, if that brings closure to the Mozeliak era as much as anything else, like you just have, you have, whether they should be lingering out there or not, clearly some people still had questions about why Schilt left. I don't know like what else to have done to like explain it.
Right.
But that's fine. They lingered. Lots of questions about the direction the Cardinals are going. Lots of direction about the last few years that certainly followed Schilt's exit. Lots of questions about whether, this was all set up for Albert to be the next manager or Yachty to be the next manager. All this stuff happening here in this window. Does it bring closure to that era and really represent the beginning of change?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I don't know if it's specifically right or wrong to miss out on the opportunity on guys like Albert and Yachty, right? If you decide not to hire them for your staff, I know Albert's going to manage. Yachty has mentioned both coaching and managing. Let's just say it doesn't work out. I wouldn't blame new leadership for not wanting to rely more on the past. I understand that. You just see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, It's time to it's time to be a new version of the Cardinals and not fall back on old friends all the time. That's not to say that those guys aren't the right choice. I think they both have tremendous qualities that could make them elite managers. But so have other people that haven't had success. So it's a really difficult thing to forecast which managers are going to have success and which ones are not going to. So I'm not trying to get into that game, but I do wonder if some of the underlying plan is like, look, we're never going to be the new version of the Cardinals if we're always leaning on the guys that were here previously.
Yep. That
right. I mean, like with a change, like think about the last time there was a change like this. It was the DeWitts buying the team and Walt Jocketty coming in and Tony La Russa being hired. Mm-hmm. And they weren't just sitting there relying on the Cardinals from the Whitey Ball era to mm-hmm. make things better, to give us a new era of Cardinals greatness, mm-hmm. right? It was mm-hmm. new eyes. It was new voices. It was new people, while also retaining the Cardinal way, right? While also retaining the stuff that Dave Ricketts brought to the catching program all those years, right? All the mm-hmm. Red Shane Deans was always around. So there was always a link, but it wasn't directly relying mm-hmm. on the people that were there in the immediate past, in the 5, 10, 15-year window before you took over.
Tony had the link too, like the direct right. connection to George Kissel.
Correct.
Anyway, we can't lose that, but he'd also
That's right.
had their places.
Right.
Yep.
So you're not severing all connections.
No.
But you're trying not to be too reliant on the most recent connections to the team.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You let go of the glory days and look for like the actual substantive history.
Yes.
Yep. All right. That's Kevin Wheeler of Camo X 104.1 FM. Nailed it.
And got
11:20 AM. You can listen to him during the Drive Time Show, DGS, there at Camo X, and you can hear him as a recurring guest here on the best podcast in baseball. BPIB is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, part of the Constant Cardinals coverage at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and stltoday.com. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me and for helping me like get this thing back on the ground after it wobbled there for a month. Trying not to let that happen, but it had some curveballs thrown its way. Also, brutal traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so it's good to talk with you. I think we hit on some real good things. I think this is our best episode ever.
I think every one we do is the best episode ever.
I think this one really earned it, though.
It was good. I love doing this, man. Thanks for having me.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.